Practice preparedness for another episode with your host, Will Hemingway, coming to you live every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. on WNJC 1360. Also streamed live off of the web, so if you're having a problem getting a clear signal, hit us on, go to practicepreparedness.com, and you can go to the listen to the show live button and use either your mobile device or your computer, and you can stream us live very clearly from there. Also, you will find that before the show, most of the time, and in this case it is so, that I have placed links up on the site for today's show, so you'll be able to go on and take a look-see at the links and notes that coincide with what I'm doing today. So you can do that also, and you should be able to find that today our topic is going to be a split topic. We're going to start out with why we prepare, and then we're going to get into habit and survival and how the two of them come together. So we're going to start out. I gave a class last week, and when we were giving the class afterwards and some conversation with some of the people from the class, one of the newer people involved was having a conversation with me, and he had brought up a really great point. He had said, he had said to me the reason why he decided that he wanted to get involved in being prepared. And I found it very interesting because, you know, I've been doing this basically my entire adult life. So as a result, to me, it's no big shakes. It is what it is. It's what you do. That said, in his case, he brought back some memories of my own. So with his, I had actually reached out to him. I was going to get him to come on anonymously and have the conversation, but I guess he's probably still working, so we didn't get that opportunity. In any event, what he had imparted to me was that he had realized that with all the craziness going on around the world, and in particular crime that's been happening in the area where he lives up just outside of King of Prussia area, that he was interested in, and I'm paraphrasing, but he was interested in making sure that he had some basic skills to be able to handle things. And in that conversation, it reminded me of one of the things that brought me to where I am, and I thought it might be a good topic to cover, which is, why do we prepare? So there are preppers out there. There are survivalists out there. There are people who are just practicing general preparedness and readiness. There's several strains in between. And a lot of press and a lot of attention has come over the past few years thanks to Nat Geo's show, Doomsday Preppers, or as I like to call it, Dumbsday Preppers. Mainly because the fact of the matter is, if you chronicle the people that they brought on there, with exception of two, almost every one of them lost everything they ever had after going on there, because they basically exposed themselves to the world, and the world responded back after being, shall we say, amused for a little while. And then the authorities came down on them and things, because they were not polished. They were not formally trained. They had put it together. They were not bad people, but they had put it together based upon what they figured out, YouTube videos and the like. And when they were interviewed and got their 15 minutes or 20 half minute hour of fame, unfortunately, some of the things that they said made them come off as, shall we say, less than balanced. So one of the things that, if you listen to my show and if you come to my classes or if you're one of my regular students, you know that the approach that I use is based upon a very stringent set of corporate training skills that I amassed over the years in my business and my career that are highly applicable to the survival and preparedness side, which is the physical security and the risk and asset management. Because what we did was protect businesses and people who the businesses were responsible for from death and injury, either in the workplace or from disasters if they were housing units and such. And this is very important because this has to do with following rules, working within a structure, but making sure that within that structure you still come out on top and are not laying in a pool of your own excrement or whatever where you can't take care of yourself, hoping that before you take your last breath, someone is going to kick the door down and come in and save you. This is not where we want you. We want you to be prepared. We want you to not be a victim. And the way you're not a victim is by being prepared. So, like I always say, always prepared, never prepared. There is no disaster when you are prepared. So, for me, my mother started me out as a survivalist when I was 7 by sending me to my room without dinner on a regular basis. And I was also taught by her to be very resourceful and self-reliant. She told me, I remember as far back as I can remember her telling me that she expected me to be self-reliant, that she didn't want somebody who was dependent, and nobody's ever completely without need or ever survives their entire life without having reached that. But that said, she pushed me to be self-reliant. And she taught me things. She taught me how to cook. By the time I was 7, I was cooking dinner for my family. By 12, 13, I was cooking dinner every night for the family. That was my job. And so with this in mind, what I learned was I went and took money that I made from cutting lawns and bought a jar of peanut butter and a box of crackers and hid them in my closet. So if I got tossed up to my bedroom without dinner, I was okay because I just have some crackers and some peanut butter and was all good. And this is really more of an analogy to how real preparation works. If you have that thing, it wasn't as good as sitting and having dinner at the dinner table with the family, but it beat the heck out of going for 4 hours in a war of battle of wills between my mother and myself before I got to go eat a cold dinner later on down at the table. And this is the same thing that you come to with there. Then later on, my mother, who did a lot of things for a lot of people, was teaching a very close friend of ours how to drive. She was from Brazil. She had limited English, but she was really bright, and she needed to have some freedom on her own, and so she taught her to drive. And when she did, she never made it to learning how to drive, because on their first excursion, they were in Stratford on the White Horse Pike, if you're from the local area in South Jersey, and a dump truck ran a red light and killed a woman, actually decapitated her in front of them. And as a result, she never wanted to get behind the wheel of a car again. In fact, she pretty much never wanted to get in a car ever again after that. And sadly, she was unable to take care of herself. So she was always, always at the whim of her husband, who wasn't always that nice. And unfortunately, this is another classic analogy of what happens when we have the opportunity, but things get in our way, for good or bad reason, that put us in a situation where we can no longer fend for ourselves. For me, I took care of myself basically my whole life, and most people who knew me referred to me as Superman up until about 4 years ago when I was rear-ended by a tractor trailer and I had an internal bleed I didn't even know I had. And I almost died. And so when I went to the hospital finally, because I had gone so low on a blood count that I was in dire threat, I was near that point where I could have actually exited stage left in a not so nice way. And it changed my entire life for me, because I was weak. I couldn't get out of bed. A week before that, I had been, before the accident, I had been mountain climbing. I had pulled thousands and thousands of feet of wire in the ceilings and the attics of a building for a major municipality, putting in a network. All these things, no 5-3 hours of sleep, everything was good, and I was ready to go and hike and camp and everything and play with my Jeep in the woods. And then, boom, I couldn't get out of bed. And I actually needed someone else. This was something I had never been in the position to do. Thankfully, several friends of mine, one friend of mine and my mother in particular, came to my rescue and helped me. Sometimes you don't always want the help, but it goes as it goes. And as it worked out, I bounced back after 3 years, and now I'm back on it again. But it leaves you with a very clear picture of how tenuous your abilities can be. This is why when we prepare, a little tidbit is that if you're preparing and you think you've got it down and you know how to make fire, for instance, using not a match or a lighter, try doing that if your favored hand is non-functional. Because can you take that out there and ask him if he'd call in and tell him why. Live radio, gotta love that. So I've got the phone right in the background and texting happening and email coming in. So we're trying to keep this really live and fresh for you. In any event, the bottom line is that what you end up with is you are reminded of not only how tenuous your life is and how your mortality is, but how the things that you think are so simple and easy all of a sudden become complicated or complete roadblocks on the ability to do anything that you would normally be able to do. So with that in mind, that's when you get to what we were talking about the other day, which is when I became a fireman, I did because a friend of mine, his father stood outside of the house when their house was on fire, running around in circles, panicking because he had no idea what to do. And meanwhile, his wife was inside of the house and ended up dying from smoke inhalation, which is, by the way, one of the most common causes of death in a house fire. And from that day on, it was my idea that there was no way I was ever going to be in the situation where I would have to stand there and say, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Somebody help. I wanted to be the one who was saying, out of my way.
Yeah.
I'm coming. It's done. That's it. And so this is an approach that I highly recommend, and one that a lot of people have come to in their own version over their lifetime to bring them to want to begin to prepare. And everyone has their own flavor. Some people want to have bug out trailers and buy, you know, like I have a bug out trailer, and other people want to have 10 bags and dig a bunker in their backyard, which I highly recommend against. And then there are others who just want to simply have a 72-hour kit in their car, right, so that they have things they need in the event that they were away from home and something happened, etc. Mm-hmm. All the same, no matter how you slice it, in the end, this is what preparedness is about. It's about not waiting until it happens to say, oh, crap, I'm not ready. I don't know what to do. Those mere seconds could be what makes the difference between you being able to survive or save someone's life or not. That's the key. Yeah. So when you look at it that way, you realize that each person takes a different path to get to preparedness. So if you're new to it and you're hearing from people you know who've been into it, don't take to heart if they tell you that everything you're doing is wrong, because no one should ever tell you that it's wrong unless it's something that's going to kill or hurt you. Right. Because what's right for you is not necessarily going to be right for them, and vice versa. And that's critical to remember, because when you come down to it, if you're doing something, it's still better than doing nothing. So if you have a kid in your car, or you have food, spare food, or if you have a bag with cold weather gear in it, so that if all of a sudden you leave in the morning and it's 60 out, I know this never happens ever around here, and then you come out of work at 6 p.m. and it's 20 outside with a eight wind chill factor, and you go, oh, I came in short sleeves today. Isn't this joyous? This is why you're prepared. It's not about some nutbag running around with, you know, 50 machine guns and whatnot and building and digging foxholes in his front yard. This is the real deal. This is real preparedness. And so we've talked about it before. Eddie, what's in your car? When we first talked, what was in your car? What do you have? Anything?
Hardly anything. Hardly anything that at least would help me in a situation where, you know.
Do you have a jack?
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah.
Is it the crappy jack that came with the car?
No, it's a new one.
It's a real jack, like a floor jack or something?
Yeah, new one knows to get a new jack.
Do you have a crossbar for the lugs?
I used to.
Okay.
And again, there was never a reason why I needed it. Mm-hmm. So,
Do you have a spare tire? Does it have air in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I
there
had
you
that
go.
In the trunk. I just got it actually. This show actually made me get that.
Okay. Like, so, you know, how about anything else? Do you have a bottle of water to put in the radiator if you overheat?
I have oil? I have protein bars. I have all that stuff.
Do you have oil for the car?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So, and you have some rags?
Yep.
Cool. Okay.
Blankets, all that stuff.
Awesome.
Yep. That's
awesome.
Cool. My dad gets very paranoid about that stuff in the winter. So
awesome.
Make sure I have it.
So, see. And for those of you listening, this is a good jump-off point to get started. And when you get started at that, that begins to give you a feel for how you make decisions about why you're prepared and what preparedness goes from. So you begin with that, and then you start working your way up from there to do things for in your home. What if the electric went out for a day? What if the electric went out for 3 days?
Yeah.
Do you have a way to take care of it? Do you have flashlights? Do you have batteries? Do you have a means like solar to charge?
Yeah.
Do you have car chargers, like I was saying last week, that you can use to charge your phone and maybe your iPad or something like that so that you're not hung out?
Yeah.
This is a real solid beginning. So when we get to that point, these are some of the things that you have to think about and the reason why you're doing it. So the first thing that's going to happen is you're going to find that you're going to have family. If you're married, a husband, a wife, they're going to be questioning why. They're going to sometimes imply that you might have slipped a gear or something. And you need to have the right answers so that you're not in an uphill battle. That you explain to them that you're not looking at, you know, fortifying yourself and making an armed camp in your yard.
Right.
That it's about helping them too. Because when they go out, they should have it in their car.
Yeah.
Because they may not be as adept as you or vice versa. And the less capable you are to fix your own situation, the more you need kits and supplies.
Mm-hmm.
Because unfortunately, gear never trumps skill.
Yeah.
And that's why once you get the gear, you need to know that you need to have skills like, how to use it and what to do with these things.
Oh, yeah, you say that too. I do have a spare tire. Don't know how to put a tire on. So the next part.
There you go. Unfortunately, it's a little far for you, but this weekend on Saturday, I'm giving a class, and a friend of mine who runs the American Preppers Network group out of North Jersey up in Wayne, they are doing a full-day class.
Really?
And the part they're going to do in the morning before I start my class is going to be on getting under the hood, checking the oil, changing things, tightening the battery clamps and all that, and actually changing the tires. Now, you just missed it with us because we did it in October over at Harbor Freight. So, but this is the thing, and being prepared is critical. So this is why when you make the conversation and you make the argument or explain your actions, you need to have in your mind a thoughtful process of how you describe what you're doing. And they don't have to get it all, But if you give them the beginning of it, right, like the spare tire, yeah, and the jack and things like that, yeah, people will slowly come around to see what's happening with, yeah, that and to get it. So now, one thing I will tell you, if you're more advanced in the game, you should think about, I actually have a link on the site for today's show, linking to the trailer. It used to actually be up online, but I cannot find it online now. It is a movie. It's kind of a B-rated movie, but it's really, the plot kills, okay, most top-line movies because, really, it's actually accurate.
Really?
And it's called Remnants. In fact, I have a friend who works at a movie place who I may get to go look for it and see if he comes across it. And it's called Remnants. And I actually have a link to the trailer on the site under this show. So you should take a look at it. You can find it. I know my son told me that he just, actually one of Marco, who calls in on the show, told me earlier today that he found it, I think, on Amazon. And he bought it, the movie, on Amazon. So it is definitely worth watching. It's shot in a very...
Is it Remnants from 2013 or Remnants the Beginning 2014?
I think it's Remnants 2013, okay, right? It's Tom Sizemore is one of the people in it. So you, anybody listening can go to the site and can look, and you can see the trailer. And that will at least give them... So I'm scribbling notes on the side here. So see, we're flying because, you know, we're flying light because it's me and me.
Yeah. Okay, Remnants. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you find it?
Yep.
So I think its tagline is Remnants: the end of the world or the start of a new one? Question mark. So in any event, it is. And it's kind of an apocalyptic thing. Mm-hmm. There's a solar flare that happens, and it knocks out the power all over the world. Excuse me. And the way they play it out with the scenarios is so accurate to what we teach in hands-on skills for protection and protective details. It is much more like, by the way, the homeowners section of it. They have a whole section where homeowners put together a little compound on a cul-de-sac. And it plays out not dissimilar to what they experienced in the real world at Benghazi. Nobody's coming. Nobody's helping. You're pinned down. And everybody wants what you have. And there's nobody going to come save you. So it's either you, you, or you. And that's about it. And this is reality, because in a real SHTF situation, though, as I've already argued several times, they will never last forever. The fact of the matter is, it doesn't have to last forever, because in 20 minutes you can expire if you come across people who are not nice. Oh, good. I got that squeaky chair again today. Yeah, this is good. So everybody hears,
so sorry.
I don't need the WD-40 my joints. It is the chair, I swear. Just because I turned into double nickels a little while ago doesn't mean that I need the WD-40 yet. I'm good. In any event, when we go through this, I'm going to touch base. I'm hoping that maybe we can get our friend to call in and talk about his experience as to why he's driven to become more aware and more skilled at being prepared. But in the meanwhile, I'm going to kind of hop a little ahead into what the rest of it is, which is the issue surrounding routine and its relation to survival. So when we do this, there are a couple links that I put up on the site, and it's under Survival Mindset. If you go there and click that, it'll actually take you to a whole area that I have, which is called Psyche of Survival on Practice Survival site. And within that, I have a series of articles there about routine as survival. And it's wrapped around a man named William James and the principles of psychology. For those of you who've been through college and taken a psych path, You've probably heard of him. William James is basically referred to as the father of American psychology. He was born in 1842 and lived until 1910. And he wrote a treatise, a book, that is definitely definitive in the area of psychology. And it really speaks to what is now taught to every FEMA person who goes on the ground, to every psychiatrist and psychologist who goes on the ground and deals with people who have survived some kind of a disaster like Katrina and Sandy and such. And basically what it gets to is about how habit defines human actions and survival. And it's in chapter 4 of Principles of Psychology and Habit. And one of the stories he tells in the book is an anecdotal of when a train, and I've talked about this once before, that was a circus train that was crossing the United States and was in the Midwest, derailed. And when it crashed off of the rails, all the animals' cages were broken open. A lot of younger people may not know, but they used to have flatbed cars, and on them they'd have 2 or 3, sometimes 4, of those wooden stagecoach style coaches that were horse-drawn, often that they would tie together one to another, and a team of horses would pull them in. At the beginning of the circus, they'd normally go through the town to draw attention and bring people in to watch the circus, and they doubled as the animals' cages. Well, when the train crashed off the track, many of them were crushed and fell over, and the animals were released. But what they recognized was that, for instance, there was a lion that had been a free-ranging lion out in the wild, and his cage was smashed open, yet he walked down, walked around, walked back up, and laid back down in his cage to wait to be fed and get water. Right. Because this is what he was patterned to. His habits had been established, so he was comfortable there. And this is critical because it may not have been the safest place and was certainly not the best place for an animal that grew up in the wild. It had it realized what was going on, could have gotten free and gotten away and been happy maybe out in the middle of nowhere, but instead stayed in captivity because that captivity was what it was comfortable with. And this is really a crucial point in the bigger picture of how your survival hinges on your mental psyche. And if you get the mental psyche, almost nothing, in fact, I'd argue outside of air and water pretty much, and not being in the middle of a razor blade factory, basically the biggest threat to you is not having a will to live, or not having a mindset that drives you to push yourself to survive, because survival is never easy.
No.
Just like life in general is never easy. That said, we all have our version of what's tough and what's easy.
Yeah.
Some people, I mean, look, I was listening to a thing yesterday, Paris Hilton, which I thought had disappeared into oblivion. I was praying because I had nightmares about that stupid TV show she used to have.
What TV show was that? I like that TV show.
Oh, good Lord. And you know, she was talking about how hard her life was since she had become a public figure, and it was so difficult on her, because she was only left $100 million in a trust fund and so forth and so on. Right. But again, it's an example of how your mind throttles how you live and how you survive. That threat to her, because she doesn't have the comfort of living in the lifestyle she was used to, is as terrible to her as not having a car.
Right.
If you have a car and you need to get to work, even if it's a $500 car.
Right.
Because it is your mode of transportation, your freedom, your opportunity to work, your opportunity to get things without having to walk, without having to go far, and so forth. And this is another example of how within the mindset, you have to understand that you set the tone for whether you will survive or not. When people survive, for instance, in Katrina, there was a really big study, one of the first one of its kind in history, and they followed these people that were victims, and I'll use that term loosely, in Katrina. And the difference between people who were in on the same block, right, who were sometimes even in the same family, and survived versus the ones who died or suffered mental trauma and now are on psychotropics and what and other things, the primary difference was that they did things to return to norm, to base. Okay. So when they did, what they did was they did simple things like make coffee in the morning, get a hold of a newspaper and read a newspaper or read a book in place of that, right, and have a conversation with their neighbor. It was something similar to what they would do in the morning when they'd wake up, turn on a TV, watch the news, get ready, have a cup of coffee, eat a donut, whatever, and then go out to work. Right. So this is critical because what they found from this was that they were able to up the ante and help these people not only just survive, but be happy, to return to normalcy much more rapidly by simply recreating some of the things that were in their routine. So if you know now what your general routine is, you may not be able to have bagels and cream cheese, but you can say, I don't know, you can have your radio so you can turn on the news and listen to the news, and you can have instant coffee, so, and a way to heat up the water so you can make yourself a cup of coffee in the morning, and you can begin to create, to recreate some semblance of that routine. Right. So I'm going to do a quick spot and then we're going to come back to this. I want to remind you of one of our sponsors that we appreciate a lot, and that's MaxServe. And they are based in Belmar, New Jersey. They serve the tri-state area, Delaware, New Jersey, Philadelphia area. Their number is 888-818-MACS. Their website is MaxServe. That's MACSERV.com. You can get a hold of my friend there, Sam. He's the founding owner of the company. And their specialty, their primary specialty is doing managed care and support for businesses. So what they will do is they specialize in their bent is Apple. They do everything, but their bent is Apple products. So if you have iPhones in your company, if you have iPads, if you're a doctor's office, a dentist's office, and you use the pads all over, they can make them sing, they can make them talk to each other, and you don't get nickeled and dimed, because their thing is about setting up backup monitoring and maintenance. They do application support, desktop support for users. They do diagnostics and maintenance. All these things they'll do for you on flat rate, hourly rate prices if you sign up with them. So give them a call and ask Sam for some help. That's MaxServe, and they are 888-818-MACS. So we're back, and we have a caller? Did we have a caller?
No.
Oh, no. Okay. And I guess while we're at it, I might as well tell you that we also have another sponsor, too, on board now, and they'll be with us for at least a few months, and they're Tax Stop, Inc. They're based out of Cherry Hill. If you are getting prepared to get your taxes done, especially if you have a small business, a partnership, or a corporation, give them a call. Call over there and ask for Colleen. Their number is 856-779-1714. They're a fully capable operation to do all your tax needs, and they also do payroll. So when you get a chance, give them a call. That's Tax Stop at 856-779-1714. So we have a caller?
Yeah, Mark Penny.
Ah, hello, Mark. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great, Will. How are you doing?
Alrighty, thanks for calling in. So you and I were talking the other day, I hope you don't mind, but I had wanted you to give it in your words what you were telling me about what brought you to the idea that you want to start getting prepared.
Sure. Well, you know, when Katrina came through down in the South, you know, there was a lot of news coverage about what role, you know, people in the other states should play as far as sending resources to that location, and what role Washington, D.C. should play. And there was a little history about, you know, the great floods of Galveston and Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and different situations historically where, you know, the federal government did not rush resources to that location, and the people in the other states did not financially bankroll the rescue of the citizens who were impacted by a natural disaster that they were, frankly, not prepared for. And, you know, it just got me to thinking that if there is a catastrophe, do I want to be a victim or do I want to be a survivor? And then recently, of course, we had Sandy come through in New Jersey. And, you know, okay, maybe I live in a spot here in Pennsylvania where, yes, we had Agnes when, you know, before I was born. And I've heard a lot about Hurricane Agnes and the flooding and the problems that happened in this part of Pennsylvania. But I've never seen it, so will it be another 100 years before we have that again, and will I be spared any level of meaningful inconvenience? And yes, I may very well go my whole life without ever being inconvenienced by Mother Nature, but in the event that that doesn't play out that way, and in the event that I am impacted and my neighbors are impacted, you know, it came down to, do I want to be that guy who's standing around with his hands in his pockets, saying, well, gee, I hope, you know, President so-and-so sends a lot of help from someplace else to bail me out because I was too busy smoking cigars and playing pinochle to
there you go.
for how to save my own rear end.
And there you go. And see, we were talking about the other day, this is my mantra, and is that, you know, forego the extra trip to Disney World and spend the money on a little time and effort on doing things to make yourself secure, because the difference between victimhood and merely a bump in the road is the idea that you took that time, made the effort, because you're, at least I think so, you're important enough to do that. Yeah. So you might as well use it in a way that's going to be worthwhile.
That's right, and I got to tell you, you know, the course, the class that I went to last week was, it was very interesting. There was a certain amount of information that, you know, sort of went right over the dam that I was not able to retain. But I picked up, you know, two or three tidbits of information that I was able to successfully absorb and integrate into my knowledge base that I think about, and I'm trying to remember, and I'm trying to hold on to that information, and I think that's the hard part, right, is with, you know, with disaster planning and preparedness and training. I mean, I've taken CPR training probably, you know, I don't know, 6 or 8 or 10 times in my life, but could I do CPR tomorrow or even tonight? Now I can't do CPR. It's not because I haven't taken the classes, it's because I took my last class like 6 years ago, and I never used it. And frankly, the class wasn't even very good. So,
which one did you take? Did you take the American Heart Association or the other one, the Red Cross?
You know, it was so long ago, I wouldn't even remember. You know, some generous volunteer or somebody took time out of their day to come to my work or wherever I was to teach us CPR, and they were making a valiant effort to communicate the information to us, but. You know, what do I know about CPR? I'm an accountant. That's, you know, I don't know any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And as I was saying, I don't know if you heard before you'd come on, but I was saying that the whole thing is you're never wrong as long as you're actively involved in moving forward. And what's right for me may not be right for you. There are subsets and interests and things, and depending upon the area you live in, everything is malleable. But the key is that you're actively engaged in taking self-responsibility for yourself, for being self-reliant. And that, and it echoes through everything you do in life, not just being prepared for something that may never happen.
Right, exactly. And that's why I've started looking at your, looking at your website. And that's why I've, come to the class. And that's why I'm going to try and make this, not a full-time job. I'm not going to be part of the lunatic fringe about it, as it were. I've got, you know, a full-time job and a life outside of this. But the class I thought was excellent, really balanced, great people, great pace, you know, just a healthy environment to be in, to hear people so knowledgeable, sharing their insights, and the hands-on aspect of, you know, using those tourniquets and actually putting my hands on those different types of bandages and things that I'd never seen before. So I'm really looking forward to the next one as well.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate the kind words, and obviously that's what we're trying to do, and we're looking to build a group of people who can be strong, because it builds community, and it builds not only for just us, but those around us who gain, and it's that snowball effect that we want to do, because we're not waiting for some mommy to come and take care of us. We're grown up. We can take care of ourselves. We just need to have the tools. And no individual is standalone. This is why on my website on practicesurvival.com and practicepreparedness.com, I have it all over there. Is about, I have articles about the fact that survival is a team sport. Whether you're broken down on the side of the road or whatever it is, it's always a team sport. And that's the key. And I really appreciate you giving a call in. I know you've got some other engagements, so I won't hold you, but I appreciate you giving your insight, because not everyone is at the same point, and it's really great for them to hear somebody who's new to the game.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks so much again for all the hard work you're doing. Great, great radio program, fantastic website, fantastic classes, and I look forward to learning more from you as we go forward.
Good deal. Take care now.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye. All right. So, and the point is that what happens when someone comes in and begins to prepare, it's so critical that people prepare with balance, with some level of balance, instead of, as he had talked about, the lunatic fringe thing. There's so many people out there who want to yap and pontificate and all this. And really, whether you're ready for a hurricane, a tornado, or a terrorist act, they're all the same in the end if you can take care of yourself. And that's the key. And when you see that, this is exciting to me, because that's a whole point. No one knows everything. I learn something new with it every day, and I've worked around it all my life. This is something that's really great when people, because every time you learn something, just simply doing it, not even saying anything about it, but doing it, begins to echo in your life around you. So when you are ready, when you're not feeling well and you say, you know what, I'm going to go out to the car for a minute, and you have Zicam in your kit in the car, and you're not sniffling like Eddie is.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks for the shout out. Much appreciated.
And this is how we learn. So this is how we learn. So we say, gee, what happens? We know that these things creep up on us, and then it makes our life miserable for us. For us, sitting inside of the studio, where microphones pick up every little squeak of the chair that I'm sitting on, that we know that having that extra thing to keep us from suffering through, like for you, 8 hours or whatever, sitting here trying not to cough, trying not to do whatever, it's difficult. Yeah. It reminds me, by the way, of another thing that built to my base as to my preparedness, was that I grew up going to a Quaker school.
Really?
And on every Wednesday, we would be marched in like good little minions into the Quaker meeting house, sit down on hard wood pews.
It had to be fun.
With squeaky hardwood floors with no heat, no matter what time of the year we were in there. And we would be there for an hour, and as I recall, though someone may call and correct me, as I recall, it was basically an hour of praying that I wouldn't cough, squeak, my nose itch, me fall over because my butt went numb, my not want to shake my leg because I was a ball of action and couldn't sit still to save my life. And what did it do? It taught me how to control my environment and myself in my environment when I couldn't change it. And what did I do? I'd come in with one pocket. Every day on Wednesday, I'd have one pocket stuffed full with tissues. And the other pocket, because I had really bad allergies, the other pocket had my inhaler, had my cough drops in it.
Jeez.
That way, if anything hit me, it would be instantaneous response.
There you go.
Because if we had to get up and leave, we would hear all about it.
Yeah.
And if we were fidgeting, we would hear all about it. And that was from kindergarten up all the way through sixth grade every year while I was there. It was one of the greatest experiences, by the way, that anyone can ever have. If you've ever thought about sending your kid to a private school and you have a friend's school in your area, you get my recommendation. They're a little bit libtardy. I mean, liberal, you know. But just the same, the experience is phenomenal. And what it does is teach you much more about being educated about everything about the world rather than just a handful of basics, which may not even work when they get done.
Yeah. Yep.
So this is really a useful thing to talk about when you start talking about what you do when you prepare. And by the way, it's just as applicable to a person who's been preparing for years. Okay. Most people, when they get started, either start with the military, and then they come home and they realize from their experience in the military that they need to be prepared because they know what some of the real threats are.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the military mentality, though I have a great deal of respect, rarely matriculates well for the private sector. Military survival is based upon unit strength and such, where we're talking about it could be you and you. Nobody's coming. So unless you're basically trained as an Air Force pilot of a fighter jet, where if you go down, it's going to be you trying to survive till they find you, the lessons you learn are not going to matriculate really well because it's all about the unit and the mission. Like I said, I have a great deal of respect for the military. It has nothing to do with that. But the fact that for the average person, if you were to tell them to hump a 110-pound pack and run, they're going to have a stroke before they make it to their car out in the front of the house.
Yeah.
So the reality is that it's not one size fits all. And one of those things, which I'm actually going to talk about at the class this weekend, is even though I'm doing situational awareness, they're going to get into what they love, the prepping end is in love with, is the BOB, the bug out bag. My argument is, forget the bug out bag, go to the inch bag. Inch means I am never coming home. The average bug out bag is good for a max of 72 hours. And I know a couple of people in particular, one who is a regular caller on our show, Jim, who's a contributor to the show. He's done it for real, out on fire lines, fighting fires for weeks at a time. 72-hour bag isn't going to get you very far. When you're in a real situation where you have no running water, where you have no food coming in, where you only have what you have with you to survive with, you get to become really up close and personal friends with your gear and about what happens when you don't have it. And by the way, this is why if you have a kit, if you are listening to this show and you have gotten to the point where you have a kit, if you have a bug out bag, if you have an inch bag, if you have a get home bag, if you've never opened it since you built it or you bought it, then that thing might as well not be with you. Because if you're in stress and you're in trouble and the first time you ever open it is then, you don't even know where anything is, what's in it, how to use it. You don't know. If you have one, bring it in the house tonight.
Yeah.
Go out to the car, bring it in the house tonight. Get it out. Open it up on your living room floor. Make a mess and put it all back together in some water. Because that's the only way you're going to make any use out of it. And the thing is that each time you do that, oh, I see we got Jim coming in, right? So, go ahead. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how are you?
Were your ears burning?
Yeah, I heard it.
So, you know, I mean, you can throw in. I mean, the thing is that you, every time you open up your bag and use it, you will end up redoing something in it for the next time, wouldn't you say?
Oh, every time. So, quite honestly, every time I open my bag, I realize that I didn't put something in or took something out or my kids took something out to use it somewhere else and it never got put back in. Yeah,
we're playing. Uh-oh. Jim, you're in that float thing on your chin.
Sorry.
Okay.
That's why it's really important to be able to use your bag.
Right.
Know what's in your bag. Because without it, you get yourself in trouble.
Right. And the thing is, like I was saying earlier, if you make it part of... Mark had made a really good point. He doesn't want to make it a full-time job. And clearly, even though you and I are in the industry where we deal with these things every day, this is not a full-time job. Once you get it done, this is what you do. It's just part of it. It's like getting up and putting your socks on.
Yeah, it's about living a lifestyle. See, you know, it's like getting in your car and driving. Driving down the road. I know that if I break down, or even more important, if my wife breaks down, that she's got all this stuff in there and actually knows how to use it. So many people create different things and they make a bag and, oh yeah, I'm going to put that in my car. Well, they don't go through, they've never tried it, they've never changed a tire, they never said, hey, you know, let me try this in case I really don't have heat in the car. Or in case my car goes off the snowbank and I'm on a road and it's snowing, you know, like a blizzard. Those are all important things.
Right. And the whole thing about it is that what it does is it even changes the way you do things in a positive way. You have more confidence. You have more ability to function. You know that at the moment that if you don't have something in hand, you can walk outside and grab your bag, or you have it on your hip, or you have it in your pocket as an EDC, an everyday carry. These are things that change the way you live in a positive way.
You know, I don't want to say it takes your concern away, because you may be concerned about different things, have different thoughts, but it's a little bit of mental preservation, self-preservation. So I have different terms for it.
Right, confidence. It gives you confidence.
Just having a flashlight, walking, you know, around in a mall or in a movie theater. You know, you don't go tripping down the aisle when the lights are out, you know, trying to get the popcorn for the kids or whatever that may be. It just gives you a little bit of reassurance.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it gives you that level of confidence. And, of course, confidence goes to what I was talking about with the psyche. When you have confidence, it puts you in control. You're not a victim. You're not being bounced around like a ping pong ball on a table. You're in charge of what you're doing.
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to use a lot of my different stuff that I've had. You know, and sometimes I pull it out and it works great. Other times I pulled out and I'm like, yeah, didn't work so good this time. Maybe I need to look at something a little bit different and change it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just even going camping, making it enjoyable. You know, take the family out camping for a weekend. Not that my wife would always think that that's really enjoyable, but, you know.
Well, there's so many variations, too, of what that equals, too. So
it's getting out and going away and spending time with the family. And, you know, at the same time, I get to try a lot of my different stuff. You know, the stuff that I carry in my bag at work. You know, I have a couple of different bags that I use for work, and they have a little bit of different stuff, whether, you know, I go away on a large disaster, or whether I'm going away on a small fire or a medium-sized fire, whatever that may be, you know, I get the opportunity to try some of the different stuff, and I'm actually not sitting out in the middle of the woods or sitting in the middle of an area that hasn't had power for 2 weeks going, really wish I had tried this. You know,
there you go. There you go. And that's really one of the big keys to it, is being ahead of the game, because nothing stinks worse than being behind the eight ball and going, okay, this stinks. It's eight. What was it last? No, it wasn't last night. Was it last night when it was like 8 degrees outside, wind chill was like minus three or whatever? And now you're going, okay, so we got no heat. We got no electricity, but it's all good. I got this. And then you find out that the bottle of the gas for the heater that you have, the catalytic heater, doesn't screw into it because it's not the right one. And you're standing there with your teeth in your mouth saying, oh, crap, now what do I do? Well, you have, you know, well, you have that situation at hand. Like you said, at least when you do these run-throughs, this is why the military does exercises over and over during the year, because every time they go out, they learn something new, and they also learn how to work together, which is a whole nother day of conversation, is learning to make a team, to work together as a team, and how important that team is. And of course, then we get into that most infamous of roadblock words in the game, which is ego. And that's really where you get in trouble, as you know. I mean, even in the fire service and everything, that happens all the time. And it's so challenging because humans are humans and ego is part of it.
You know, the best mindset to have is one of confidence. But I tell, you know, I'm a supervisor at work. I have a staff, and I tell them all the time, I am not the end-all to be-all. I might have some different ideas, you may have some different ideas, and between all of us, we'll come up with a really good one.
Right, and see, that's the great thing. I was really happy because Mark, it was his first real encounter with us in our classes, and the point of how I've tried to put this together and how you've come together with me and some others, and how that has transmitted to the people, that's a win, because everybody comes out ahead. I'm not the greatest at everything, you're not the greatest, but we know what we know, and we know how to do it, and we also know how to guide and help to mentor people, and they will bring things out to you. I know you've had it happen. I've certainly had it happen where all of a sudden, we had one, I'll leave nameless, the other day at that class, who at the end came out and threw me a curveball after being to 10 of the classes, suddenly tells me, oh, well, didn't I tell you that, I guess I never told you because I was kind of keeping it to myself, but I was a welder, and I was this, and I was an ER nurse, and so forth, and suddenly the whole thing threw me a whole shock of how, by the way, somebody's calling in, I think trying to do a call-in, and they come in on the same line, and since they don't roll over, it makes that beeping noise. So if they're trying to get in the last minute, we've only got a couple minutes left. Well, I don't know if we're going to be able, what are we, 3 minutes?
4 minutes.
4 minutes, yeah, I don't think we can do.
I'll jump off.
Okay.
You guys have a great night.
You too.
I've taken up enough of your time.
Thank you. Take care now. So, in any event, I think we had somebody who was going to call in. They told me last week about their experience with what brought them to learn skills outdoors and all that, which is another example of what happens and how people learn being influenced by people who are knowledgeable in areas that they can teach them things and teach them how to do things. And that's a really great experience for everybody. In any event, so, well, we only have I guess we're down to like a minute now. So we had lots of callers calling in, and we can only handle so many and actually get the point across. I'm sorry to the callers, but we'll end up bringing you in next time around. Get in early because we can at least have you call back or something, and when we're ready to take in a caller, it's kind of hard with only 1 hour.
Yeah.
In any event, so I guess we're pretty much down. What are we down to, about a minute now?
Two minutes.
Okay, so basically, the point to leave you with is being prepared is not some lunatic fringe thing. It's every day. Preparedness is every day. Go to the website. Go to practicepreparedness.com. You can link to all my other websites. There's tons of classes out there that we give, pay, and some nominal fees. Hook up with us on meetup.com. And until next week, we want to remind you to go visit our friends over at Meadows Diner in Blackwood, New Jersey. They're at 101 South Black Horse Pike in Blackwood, New Jersey, just off of Black Horse Pike and the Route 42. They're a great place. Go tell Nick we said hello and have a good dinner or breakfast with them in the next few days. Until next time, I am your host, Will Hemingway. This is Practice Preparedness. practicepreparedness.com. We're out of here.